Earlier this spring, graphic videos began airing on television stations near U.S. Air Force bases, showing the smoking debris of overseas villages and the charred remains of children.
U.S. drones have murdered thousands, including women and children. Drone pilots, please refuse to fly.
The videos were created by No Drones, that's K-N-O-W Drones, a group dedicated to achieving an international ban on drone warfare. The video campaign comes at a time when the Air Force is facing a steady drop in the number of pilots trained to fly drone missions. It's part of a trend that some have called drone fatigue. And here to tell us more is Pratap Chatterjee. He's executive director with CorpWatch. That's an investigative journalism group. Pratap wrote an op-ed on drone war burnout for the New York Times. And Pratap Chatterjee, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you for having me.
Do you have accurate numbers of how many drone strikes have been made by the U.S.?
The United States doesn't publish the number of drone strikes that have been undertaken in the U.S. war on terrorism. On the other hand, there are nonprofit groups that have tracked this. The Bureau of Investigative Journalism in London, where I once worked, has kept track of confirmed strikes in Pakistan, Yemen, and Somalia. And to date, they've counted 646 strikes. Now, that's not the full extent of it, because the U.S. Air Force, NATO, for example, do drone strikes in Iraq, Afghanistan, as part of conventional warfare. There's also coalition airstrikes, drone strikes in Syria. So the 646 number is definitely a lowball number.
So we have this idea that drone operators are playing with joysticks in air-conditioned rooms miles or even continents away from the battlefield. What I'm hearing from you is much more sort of direct involvement with the targets for some of the people who are in this drone program.
Well, it's a very complex system. So the video footage of a person on the ground or people on the ground is streamed back pretty much real time. There's a very slight delay, but it, you know, uplinks from the, let's say, the Predator or the Reaper drone to a satellite, and then it bounces through a variety of mechanisms to Nevada and to Florida. But there's a lot of people involved in this. There's pilots, often in Nevada. There's analysts who could be here in California where I live. They could be in Florida. There are commanders, often in the Middle East, in Qatar. And then there are recovery pilots, let's say in Afghanistan or Saudi Arabia. So there's a lot of people involved in this. And some of them, it's their job to not just watch this in real time, watch multiple fields real time, but also go back over historical footage to see if they're tracking the right people. So it's a complex and difficult environment. But I think perhaps what's even more taxing on them is the fact that there's so few people that are trained that, in fact, they often have to work many hours at a time. They work 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, you know, months on end. And so this overwork and the stress, bouncing between watching somebody in Pakistan and then, let's say, you know, clocking off and then going to pick the kids up from school, has created enormous mental fatigue for these drone operators, particularly the youngest among them, according to Wayne Chappelle, who's a Air Force psychologist who's been studying this for about 5 years.
And these are relatively low-level workers, right?
Absolutely low-level workers. The imagery analysts, the people who are responsible for analyzing the footage, are typically at the bottom of the food chain. And this is what they've been telling me in my conversations with them. I'm not hearing so much from the pilots, and the Air Force psychologists are not hearing as much stress or burnout among the pilots. It's higher than regular pilots, but they're hearing the most from the youngest among them, mm-hmm. who are literally 19 and 20, who have less than a year of training. Typically, it's 2 months of boot camp, 9 months of intelligence training. Within 12 months, they're on the job. And there was a recent report by the GAO, the Government Accounting Office, where they actually did not a definitive survey, but they surveyed a bunch of drone pilots, and they found that only 35% of them had actually completed training.
The organization you mentioned, the GAO, and the internal Air Force memos also revealed that drone pilots are indeed leaving the job in record numbers, citing stress and PTSD in many cases. The history of war is also the history of how technology is used, and this is a technology that's been used for relatively few years. From the psychologist that you spoke to, is there any attempt to create new ways to help not just pilots, but all of the associated personnel to deal with the psychological effects of drone warfare?
So drone warfare, killing people by remote control, really sort of begins in 2002 with the strike in Yemen. And now, you know, the pace has picked up in the Obama administration, who have really pioneered this technology. And the designations of who is what's called an RPA, remotely piloted aircraft pilot, or imagery analyst, these are brand new jobs that have been created literally in the last 5 years. So it's true that they have not provided psychological support. The Air Force is now providing what they call human performance teams. So they're providing chaplains, they're providing ergonomic experts, because these people are working 12 hours a day. They're getting burnout, not just from watching images on the ground, but from using the equipment. And they're providing psychologists in the field, on the floor of where this takes place. It still doesn't erase, you know, the images of people dying. And one of the things that very few people experience in conventional warfare is seeing your victim bleed to death in front of you, seeing them drag themselves, or even the person you're trying to save, if it's a soldier, seeing them drag themselves off across the field. You see not just what happened to them then, 5 minutes later, an hour later, but for days later. You see their funerals, you see their relatives, you see their wives, their children. So you see a lot more. And so it's a very different world where, in fact, these pilots are experiencing war up close and personal in a way that few soldiers ever experienced in the past. So it's much more in your face, so to speak. So the Air Force is trying to deal with that. I think, in fact, the issue is not so much about purely treating the pilots, but also addressing the issue of people on the ground. The drones, because they're overhead all the time, are driving people mad. And no less a person than the former head of the Defense Intelligence Agency and former head of intelligence in Afghanistan, Michael Flynn, has said that this drone war is actually counterproductive. So it's not just about treating pilots, it's about treating the people that live under them. It's in fact a very flawed program to begin with.
Well, this is an op-ed that you wrote, after all, in the New York Times. What are you advocating for? We can hear what you're against, I think. What are you advocating for?
What I'm calling for in the New York Times op-ed is for the pilots to come forward and tell us what they actually personally experienced, because they know. And I think hearing from them directly is something that would provide the transparency that the Obama administration has refused to give us.
Pratap Chatterjee, thank you for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me.
Pratap Chatterjee, he's executive director of CorpWatch. It's an investigative journalism group, and he's co-author of the forthcoming graphic novel, Virax. You can find more on Pratap's work, including his op-ed from the New York Times, by going to wordofmouthradio.org.